Smell the IGA frozen chicken nuggets from here.
Fingers, bro.
Sorry.
They didn't have any at IGA on Monday when I went. That's actually where I got the Georgia Southern beer, was at IGA. So I had to go to downtown Statesboro and go to Ellis Meat Market, where the bags were $28, which is outrageous because at IGA they're like $17.
Are you telling me you went to a separate grocery store just to get frozen chicken fingers?
Wit, you don't understand. You do not understand.
I think he's right. I don't think we do.
You might have a problem.
Dude, are you telling me this bag?
You're telling me Tyson isn't good enough to buy from the same grocery store that you're already shopping at?
Dude, I'm telling you, like, the fact that I can only get them at IGA and Ellis Meat Market tells me, I think they're back there slaughtering chickens and, like, just cutting them straight off the bone. Like, this is not some frozen Purdue Tyson chicken finger. Like, this, like, it cost me $57 for the two bags I bought.
Oh, my God.
Holy crap. How many chicken fingers do you get per bag?
It's 5 pounds each.
Yeah, it's like a 5 pound bag. Dude, I literally didn't even need a bag. I still have got like a quarter of a bag left in the freezer. But I've been preaching the past few weeks over here at the Howell House to Anna Marie about these fantastic frozen chicken fingers. So I literally walked in the house tonight and I was like, I got them. So I bought Matt and Anna Maria a bag.
Oh my gosh. Housewarming gift?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what, yeah. And I gave him the other three beers in this six pack because I didn't like them.
Which really, they're not my,
they're not that good.
It's all right.
It was a here's a gift / I'm dumping these beers on you because I want them out of my fridge.
They're not bad. They're like, it's like an IPA. It's like a light IPA would be the best way to describe it.
Did we have these at Eagle Creek?
No, I had them.
I don't think it's an Eagle Creek beer though.
It's not.
It's a Fire Maker, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Fire Maker. I had them when I went to the first game of the season in the beer garden.
Yeah, Fire Maker.
I drank like 12 of them and felt nothing. So that I kind of knew at that point. They're like 4%.
Yeah, it's
they're not that good.
Yeah. The taste is very...
It's okay.
Like, good for them for putting Georgia Southern on a can and it's trying. People are going to buy it.
It's a good-looking can.
Solely for the...
It's a great-looking can.
Yeah.
You know, all this talk about beer and who they're putting on cans, and I'm not going where you guys think I'm going with this. But you know who they should put on a can? Me. I went 6-0 last week, boys. I was undefeated. It's the first undefeated week in the Rowdy Picks all year long.
Bringing some dignity back to the picks here.
And you gained what, one game on me?
Oh, me and Witt are now tied.
So two. He gained two.
I was
5-1.
I was still under 500 when the week started. And then I won six straight. I was 23-24 on the year until now.
Now he's ready. He's ready
to try. I'm ready now. I'm not going to Boise. Witt is.
None of us are going to Boise. Let's get this straight. I'm not. Like, I like doing my road trips. I'm not road tripping to Idaho.
But it's the famous Idaho.
What's wrong with Idaho in December?
Exactly.
I'm not going to Idaho in December.
Tell me.
I'm not going to Idaho.
Tell me this. If you want.
I'm not going to Idaho in December.
If you won't go to Idaho.
I'm not going to Idaho in December.
Just hear me out. Here we go again. No one's letting me talk. Ra Ra Thomas is the best receiver on Georgia's team.
He actually had a pretty good game.
He did. Thank you. That's not what I was trying to say last week, but all I'm saying is like, all right, what were Keys' bachelor party or mine or your or like my future bachelor party for whatever reason?
Are you getting married?
What if I'm like
news to me? I didn't.
That's not what Krista told me at the Halloween party. You want to share something with the group, Keys?
I have nothing to share as of now.
All I'm saying is what if I was like, Wit, this is my bachelor party, man. Let's go skiing. Let's go get a cabin and get shit-faced, and let's go skiing up in the mountains around Boise in February. You wouldn't go.
No, for your bachelor party, yes. That's
different. He's not going for the Idaho potato
by ball. Myself for the no. I honestly, if us four were like, hey, Rowdy Southern Saturday road trip, Idaho potato bowl, let's make it happen. I'd say absolutely, let's do it. I'll put a whole trip together for us. I'll figure it out. We'll road trip. We'll have stops in between, like I always do, for your bachelor party to go skiing. Sure, I'm in. By myself to go watch the potato bowl? No, I'm not doing that. Absolutely not. Right, but I got way better things to do.
But your whole point was, is I'm not going to Idaho in December. So alone. You're saying you're not going to Idaho in the winter, but like you would go to Idaho in the winter.
Yes.
Just not alone.
Yes.
All right. That's all I need to go alone. Myself.
I can't be cold and alone, but I can be cold with friends.
See, that's all I needed to hear okay. is that you care.
Yes, I care.
That's all I really needed to hear.
I care very much.
I went 6-0. We're going to have a lot of great picks this week. But what we need to start the week off at is, guys, we've been talking about it and talking about it and talking about it. Alex Grinch is finally out of a job.
Yeah.
Finally.
It took long enough. And honestly, I'm shocked it took as long as it did. You would think that after the first big loss this season and the defense consistently being subpar, that would have been what did it. But no, Alex Grinch, it took him losing three straight. Which
three of four?
Woof! Oh yeah, three of four.
Well, they gave up 49 to yeah. Cal.
That should be a loss. That should count as a loss. If you give up 49 points to Cal, you lose. So they lose three out of four. Obviously, all three of the teams they lost to are just better than them. But when you have a dynamic playmaker like Caleb Williams, and that dude has officially gone from the certified number one pick to two. Maybe three. Like he's not a surefire number one pick anymore. And you know, Lincoln Riley has a lot of things to think about over there. And USC, I don't even know where to start with them, man.
Dude, yeah, I mean the fact that what's their record right now? I can't even remember off the top of my head. Is it three losses or four?
Six and three.
The fact that they already have three losses right now, with what they have coming up, is scary for Lincoln Riley. Now, I know you guys have talked about potentially putting him on the hot seat if he ends up going 7-5 or losing three more games this year. I don't think that's going to happen. But what he does with the Alex Grinch firing and hiring for DC is going to make or break what he does at USC. If he hires somebody pretty good that can come in and revamp the defense, then get that defense right, still have a really good offense next year, he could win a national championship. They have a good enough. They probably have the best offense in the country. Top two, at least. Maybe them or LSU. But without having Jaden Daniels hurt. But they, if they can put somebody in there that knows how to run a defense, that could be a scary team.
Oh, I completely agree. Look, I think with Lincoln Riley that USC is back to the potential of being what we saw very early on in our lives. Like early to mid-2000s. With Pete Carroll and who they were with Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart, like the potential for USC to do that again is there. And I think Lincoln Riley is a phenomenal coach. I don't think he's on the hot seat, to clarify. My thoughts was is he's got one eye on the NFL. I don't think really that the Alex Grinch firing kind of takes his eyes off the NFL, because it's like we keep talking about, like it's only going to get harder from here. Right. Like you lose Caleb Williams this year. I don't know what their recruiting situation is or what their backup situation is at quarterback, because we haven't needed to talk about it. We haven't, because Caleb Williams has been that electric the past 2 years. So you kind of have to wonder, they're going into the Big Ten. We talk about him not being a competitor. You got to now face Ohio State's defense, Michigan's defense. You give Luke Fickell time. Wisconsin never has a problem with their defense. Iowa's defense. Matt Rhule at Nebraska. We'll see what happens. Rutgers. Rutgers is better. Like, Rutgers gave Ohio State a fight this week. And then you're not losing your rivalry. UCLA and Chip Kelly's coming. Now, they're an offensive team. But Washington and Oregon are going with you. So, he fired Alex Grinch because it was the right thing to do. I still have to wonder, though, even with this firing, I think it's a put a Band-Aid over the problem now and see what we can salvage the rest of the season. I don't think it's going to get any better. You're already 9 games deep. Your final 3 games are very tough. And the Pac-12 is not getting any easier. But overall, I still think he's going to leave. I still think he's going to leave. And honestly, if the Falcons so rightfully fire Arthur Smith like they need to, I'll take him.
See, I don't necessarily think that he has an eye on the NFL, and I'm not putting him on the hot seat. I just feel like he's positioned himself to where he has had the worst year of a college coach that hasn't had some sort of scandal around him. Like, Dabo was kind of getting some pressure, but Clemson's responded now with a massive win over Notre Dame. And the team's kind of always been behind Dabo. Like, you never saw the team really quit on him. I wouldn't say that the team's behind Lincoln Riley. And this was coming into the season, a playoff favorite for pretty much everyone across the board out of the Pac-12. They were supposed to beat Washington. They were supposed to still be better, or at least if they were going to lose, it would be to Oregon. Like, that was going to be a matchup that sealed the deal for USC's fate this year. And they haven't even been competitive in those games to the point where, like, defensively at least. Offensively, they can score on anybody. They're very reminiscent of Oklahoma teams from the past. And I know that Lando used to always complain about the way that Lincoln Riley coached those teams and the way that everything worked out. But I just still feel like Lincoln Riley, it's not that he's got an eye elsewhere. It's just that there's almost an arrogance in his decision-making to a point where it's like, I'm doing it my way. I'm doing it my way. And I also believe that Alex Grinch wasn't fired because Lincoln Riley had enough. I think he was kind of put in a position where the university was like, you got to do something about this because we're not watching this anymore, and either you're gone or he's gone. And he's like, all right, well, I do need to put a Band-Aid on this. Fire Alex Grinch. But you don't like, it's an arrogance about Lincoln Riley that where he's just like, this is how I'm going to win football games.
Well, a lot of it's very Dabo-esque, isn't it? It's kind of similar in a way, because if you think about it this way, like, you can't put it all on Alex Grinch. Lincoln Riley has had this problem at both places he's been as a head coach.
But who's the common denominator there?
Yes, but Lincoln Riley is the one who recruits all these offensive players, and his staff makes a focus on more offensive recruits. That's what I'm saying.
Is USC the inverse Iowa? Like, honestly, hey, yeah. we've got a really good offense, and so every year Alex Grinch is coming into these meetings. He's like, boy, y'all's offense sure is good. And everyone's like, man, yeah, they sure are. You know, he's going into press conferences saying, like, so who won the scrimmage today? Well, offense, you know, looked pretty good. And then in Iowa, they're doing the opposite, where the defense is like, oh, well, are we actually good?
What kind of team would you have if Brian Ferentz and Alex Grinch were your coordinators?
Non-win team. A team that loses. Team that would look reminiscent of what we're seeing from Mississippi State currently.
Matt's ready.
I'm ready.
Matt's ready.
Still going after him.
Well, no. It's not that I'm still going on. Okay, I am a little bit. But it's
just tell the truth.
So here's the thing. Preseason, and people are still clapping back about our preseason thing, and they keep trying to find, like, oh, well, we did this. Oh, well, we did this. Zach Arnett's about to get fired. It's basically been done and determined. And there's two names that I've heard from a reputable source on the subject that they've already reached out to. And then when you've gotten to that point, that means it's a done deal. Like, Zach Arnett's done. Now, is fair, unfair, indifferent, whatever, Zach Arnett's getting fired. And the two names, and this is where I kind of wanted to see where we're going from this. I actually heard this. One of the beat writers for Ole Miss has connections at Mississippi State, and Willie Fritz and John Summerall at Troy are the two names that have been thrown out there for Mississippi State. Now, realistically,
brilliant.
Those would be both fairly good hires. I think Summerall would be an outstanding hire. However, if you're John Summerall, don't you have to ask yourself in that meeting, what are the odds that I can actually win here? And that goes for any coach going
in. I'm about to say, that's the same for Willie Fritz, too, though. I mean, if you look at it, the AAC is about to become the fifth best conference in college football, or at least in on paper. And Willie Fritz has the team that's the best team in that conference right now. Going into a 12-team playoff, he's sitting in a great position with Tulane. Why would you leave Tulane when you have a really good chance to make the playoff every year? Obviously, how they redo the format is going to be huge. If they do the six conference champions, Tulane is sitting pretty every year. I don't see a team in that conference right now that's going to compete with Tulane year to year with Willie Fritz still as the head coach. If John Summerall, Troy, maybe the same deal, but the Sun Belt's a little bit more competitive still. Troy is good. I'd say Troy's probably the best program in the Sun Belt right now, but they're not going to go win every single year. There's teams in the Sun Belt that can win the Sun Belt. There's not a team in the AAC right now that can beat Tulane.
But if you're John Summerall, you're basically – John Summerall is basically – it's not been necessarily said, but he's basically the successor behind Mark Stoops if Stoops decides to take the Iowa job. So if you're John Summerall, you say, all right, well, which one has more upside? Well, I think we've seen which one has more upside in the past. Like right now we're watching it.
Considering they just kicked their ass this weekend.
Yeah, Kentucky by a mile.
Well, and you've seen that fan base in Lexington is willing to put forth some money for NIL. You've seen that fan base in Lexington is willing to pay $8 million a year for a head football coach as long as he goes 8-4. And Lexington is not that bad of a place to live. Otherwise, you're going to go to Starkville. You're going to get paid $5 million a year, which, you know, is not
piss
bad.
Poor money.
Considering he makes $1 million right now, it's a 500% increase in wage. But you're going to go there knowing that no matter what you do, it depends on what's going on in the north end of the state on whether or not your job's safe. Because let's be honest, the only reason that Zach Arnett, and I even said this in that clip whenever Witt said that he thought Arnett was going to get fired. The only reason Arnett's even on the hot seat is because Ole Miss is 8-1 right now going into Athens, and 10 wins looks very reasonable on their schedule with their last two games after Georgia being ULM, which is horrible. That's if Ole Miss loses that game, there must have been a bomb that went off or a stomach flu that went through the entire team and they didn't show up.
Don't sleep on the Bowden brothers.
And then the obviously the Egg Bowl, and weird things can happen. But let's be real, if Ole Miss loses to that team, something disastrous happened as well. So you're looking at Ole Miss team with a chance to go to win 10 games. If Ole Miss is sitting 6-3 right now, Zach Arnett's probably fine.
Yeah, and another aspect of that we kind of talked about last year, unfortunately, after it all went down, was realistically, Zach Arnett was never who they wanted to hire. They gave Zach Arnett...
I actually disagree.
See, I don't think so. I think Zach Arnett was the respectful thing to do because after what happened and we unfortunately lost the Pirate, do you really think that going on a national coaching search while also trying to grieve the death of your coach was a respectful and right thing to do from a PR standpoint as well? Not only a moral standpoint, but... Look, Zach Arnett is an easy scapegoat in this situation because it's, well, you know, we kept you on after what happened. We did the right thing. And, now it didn't go so well. You ruined our offense because he really has. Like, oh, my God, how do you ruin that offense with what they were? Like, I know it's not Mike Leach still calling plays, but he didn't really have to change anything, and I think he'd have been all right. You know, at least from a 6-7 win standpoint, but I don't think it's who they wanted anyway. I think now you can easily, if you're Mississippi State, you can go, okay, we gave it a year, we did the respectful thing for the Leach family. Now let's go get who we want.
See, here's where I disagree with you, and this is why I say I think that Arnett is who they wanted anyways. People, it's easy to forget this because this isn't what happened. But there were two narratives going into the Egg Bowl last year. One, Lane Kiffin to Auburn. Obvious, that was the big storyline. And because that was as massive as it was, it covered up the fact There were several rumors that were floating around that the Egg Bowl was going to be Mike Leach's last game at Mississippi State. Not because of anything other than there was two things. There was one, if he loses, there's a good chance that Mississippi State was going to want to move on. Because that would have made him 0-3 in the Egg Bowl against Ole Miss. And then Mississippi State would have been 7-5, and they would have said, well, what do we want to be? He wins the game. Then, ultimately, the other side of that was that it had kind of come out that Leach had been having some health problems earlier in the year. And ultimately, that, unfortunately, came back in December of that year. And but the reality of all of this was it had kind of been known in the state circle that there was a possibility that Mike Leach was coaching his last game in Oxford, Mississippi last year, aside from the bowl game. They was an assumption that he would coach the bowl game and then step away. Zach Arnett had already been a name that was getting pushed in circles in Starkville as a name to be replacing Mike Leach when he left because he had a big following there. The defense under Mike Leach was really good. And I don't know this to be true or not, but I personally think that there were times where Zach Arnett was kind of undercutting Coach Leach behind closed doors with boosters and saying, We're going 7-5 because the air raid doesn't work against Alabama. And the air raid doesn't work against Auburn or A&M or whoever it is that they, I think they beat A&M, but they were losing games. And I think Arnett was kind of like, man, this defense sure is really good. What if we had an offense that would work? And the boosters were starting to buy into that a little bit. And I think that's where some of the rumblings came from. But I think they got who they wanted. It's been disastrous. And they have the perfect, like, backstory is to, okay, well, we can let go of him because of XYZ and it's not bad and we did the right thing and it all looked good versus Leach retired, we hired Arnett, we fired him after a year.
I also think Zach Arnett was an easy hire too. Like, it's a guy you just put right into the role. He's been there for a long time.
You don't lose a lot of money.
Yeah, you don't have to pay him a ton either. Like, you give him a shot, you give him a year and go, okay, go 8-4, go 7-5, at least make a bowl game. Like, show us that you can improve this team, or at least take what Mike Leach was doing and continue to do what he was doing, and don't go 3-9 like you're about to do, and we'll let you keep the job. But and then if he gets fired this year, you don't go, oh man, he could have had 3 years and done really well. Like, if he gets fired, it's like, all right, obviously he wasn't the right guy.
I do see Chad's point in them being the scapegoat because he hasn't had a year to recruit. It's not his players that are playing right now.
Here's the one part that I kind of disagree with you on, the fact that I think that they wanted Arnett the whole time. His deal was only 3 years. He only signed a 3-year deal.
But the max you can sign in Mississippi is 4.
But even then, wouldn't you give him the max deal?
I mean, you give him the 3, you say, hey, we're putting our backing behind you in these 3 years. You do successful, we give you the rest of it. I mean, you get an extent, like the way that Lane Kiffin.
I always forget that, though. You've said that a lot, and I always forget that.
It's a weird Mississippi thing. No one can have a contract from a state institution longer than the governor.
Huh.
Is that not the most backwoods southern weird thing you've ever heard?
Mississippi.
That's so weird.
Mississippi is such a weird place.
Oh, it's a beautiful place.
Ryan hates it.
In the north.
So no. But he hates Arkansas more.
He does.
So you're telling me that Zach Arnett and Lane Kiffin cannot be guaranteed employment longer than Tate Reeves?
That is correct.
That is if Tate Reeves won last night. I don't know.
I don't know if he did either. But yes, that is correct.
Yeah.
So that is a state law. Now, there's a back door to it. So the way that was part of the reason why everyone was kind of calling for it last year whenever Lane Kiffin Auburn thing was happening, because they were like, Auburn's sell was, Ole Miss can offer you the same average annual value on your deal. Sure. However, we can offer you 10 years, $100 million. The best they can do is offer you 4 years, $40 million. And if you get fired after that third year, you get $10 million, whereas in Auburn, you get 70. That was the sell. But there are backdoors that you can do. So essentially, they flip it into like a pension. So Lane Kiffin's deal is technically 6 years because you can do half and you can extend that contract another half of the whatever.
So there's options, basically.
Basically
exercising options.
And then, like, the Ole Miss baseball coach, Mike Bianco, his deal basically gets renewed every year. So he gets a new four-year deal every single year. That's right. How they get around it.
Right. Right. Well, that's enough about Mississippi. Let's talk about something that happened in a neighboring state, and let's let Matt get his say in. Guys, I'm telling you, Alabama's coming.
Hey, watch out.
You should have beat them. You should have beat them when you had the chance. Alabama is swinging a big sword right now. And if you got Alabama left on your schedule, you need to fear the tide. They look good. And I don't care what anybody says about Jalen Milroe. When you rush for four touchdowns, now granted it was against LSU's defense, but when you rush for four, that's what I thought. When you rush for four touchdowns, you're feeling it. And whether he's feeling it in the short passing game is different, but Jalen Milroe looks good.
On his feet.
On his feet.
Jalen Milroe, I told this to Witt Saturday night. I said, Jalen Milroe is what everyone said Jalen Hurts was.
He is, exactly. We're like
and
textbook definition.
It's everyone said Hurts can't throw, Hurts can't throw, Hurts can't throw. Hurts could throw the intermediate. His accuracy on deep balls wasn't great. Jalen Milroe cannot throw.
He throws a beautiful deep ball.
When he hits it, yeah. But he has to have time to do that. But he also has to have the ability to read the defense. And he still struggles with that. Heck of an athlete. Unbelievable. His line was a running back line, though. He had like 17 carries for 142 and four touchdowns. That's absurd. It is absurd.
They're Derrick running Henry numbers.
They're running Georgia Southern's offense from 2018.
Yeah, I mean, you put him on a Willie Fritz Georgia Southern team. Watch out.
Wait a minute, Whit. You said 2018 Georgia Southern, so you're telling me that Tyson Summers would run a great program in Alabama?
That would be Chad Lunsford in 2018. Fall 2018 was my last year. There was a lot. It was the year way. That we went to.
I don't want to get into all that.
Anywho,
shotgun so, triple option.
I thought he was fired in the middle of 18. It must have been 17.
Just watch out. Just watch out for us, because the best part about this is, including myself, I still am not going to boisterously say, like, oh, yeah, we're coming for Georgia. We're good. We're a very good team compared to what we were, but I've got to give all the credit.
What a tone change.
Huh?
What a change in tone for Matt.
No, but here's I've got to give a lot of credit to people. Obviously, one, Nick Saban, because every year the national media does it, throwing dirt on us. They're dead. And every year Saban just pops up and he's like, here's another 10-win season and a fuck you. and like this year, I mean, even I was like, I watched that Texas game and the fourth quarter was so bad. Then I watched the USF game and it was like, oh. Then I watched the Ole Miss game and I was like, how really good is Ole Miss even? And now, like, I got to give so much credit to Tommy Rees, because Tommy Rees has embraced, you're my quarterback. Let me build an offensive system around your strengths. He added an RPO to the game, and that's what they unleashed against LSU this weekend. And if Jalen Milroe uses his legs like he did this past weekend, he could beat anybody in the country. We're the most dangerous team in the country. And I say that because of how elite the defense is.
Yeah, the defense is really, really good. And I mean, so far it's been about how I said I would go for Alabama this year. Besides the fact that they lost to Texas, I had them losing to Auburn at the end of the season. I've watched Auburn play. I'd be shocked if that happened. That would be some true black magic Jordan Hare crap that happened, if that does happen. But Alabama, obviously not as good as years before, playing completely different than they have the past 5 years. It's been all defense and run game, as we said it would be coming to the season. Granted, it's been more quarterback run game than it has been running back run game, but still pretty much the same. But Alabama's schedule, although really, really tough, kind of maps out pretty well for them, getting the best teams they got to play this season at home, which is perfect for what they have going on. Defense plays better. Jalen Milroe is kind of coming to his own. I think Tommy Rees, like you said, is starting to figure out how to use Jalen Milroe. You don't use him like a normal quarterback. You run him 20 times a game like Lamar Jackson and just let him take over defenses, which is exactly what he did against LSU. And you're right, Chad, LSU's defense is terrible. But even still, running for over 100 yards and four touchdowns as a quarterback against a high school team is still really good. So give him credit for it. Alabama's going to be a tough team. If it's Alabama, Georgia, and the SEC championship, that's not going to be a beatdown by any means.
And also, I just want to add a little note to this. Now, granted, I didn't get to watch the whole game because I was on my way back from a funeral. I had the iPad up in the car, and we were kind of switching back and forth between that and USC and Washington. But I don't think it was a dirty hit.
No,
I don't think it was a dirty hit. I think it was a football play that people in 1980 were like, yeah. And now all of a sudden in 2023, everybody's like, no.
That was a football play that in 2011 people were celebrating. It was a football play that in 2022, and I think here's my issue. If it was not Dallas Turner, because Dallas Turner does have a history of having some dirty plays, I will say, like, there was a hit that he had. I think it was Matt Corral where he shoved his face in the ground as he was getting up off of him. Like he tackled him.
Oh wow! It's football.
I mean, it's football. Like he's an edgy defensive player, and so he's got this label as being a dirty player. And yeah, like hey, newsflash: defensive linemen want to hit the shit out of the quarterback. Shocker!
It's football. Can we play football in 2023? I mean, in the NFL, your hands can't brush the quarterback's helmet as he lets go of the ball. Oh, roughing the passer.
Now, I'll say this. It was a high hit, but it was not targeting.
He just hit him in the shoulders.
Like, everyone that has been saying, like, targeting, I'm like, no, he didn't lead with the crown of his helmet. He hit him in the chest, and as he was going to the ground, out of his helmet, hit him in the chin. Hey, tell your O-line to protect you better. Get rid of the ball sooner. I don't know. But it wasn't even a late hit. It was just it was called exactly as it should have been. He landed with all of his body weight on the quarterback, which is a roughing the passer. They called the penalty. They reviewed it. It wasn't targeting because it wasn't targeting. Everybody move on.
I'm going to be honest. Like that's another thing that bothers me about the roughing the passer calls. Yeah, he landed on him with his body weight, but he hit him a millisecond after he released the ball. It's not even like he nailed him and just drove him into the ground 3-4 seconds after he let go of the football. Whatever.
It's been a rule for a while now, though. I mean,
you're not wrong, but I hate it. Like, I hate it. Like, we can't play football anymore.
I mean, I'm still...
Y'all
know where I've complained on this podcast a million times about the targeting rule anyway. It should not be an ejection unless it's an obvious flagrant. I was using my head as a missile into someone else's head to cause a concussion.
Yeah, you can tell. I mean, there's like a thrust and like it's like a situational thing, but sometimes it's just kind of like they were just trying to play football.
Well, and that's why they started this whole review thing. But then you got to stop the game, go through this whole review and go, oh, wait. If you zoom in really, really close. Oh, they touched helmets. Get him out. He's gone. It's like that doesn't need to be that way. Yeah, it's like he didn't do anything wrong. Their helmets are massive.
If it's not a blatant, intentional, I'm leading with my head to take your head off hit, stop reviewing it. Stop the ejections at least. Like if you want to throw a 15-yard penalty on it, sure. But there should only be an ejection on like a blatant, flagrant targeting,
which at a certain point that becomes like unsportsmanlike, and that can be ejected. You know, it's
ridiculous. So they just let the boys play.
Let the boys play, ref. Let them play.
I'm sure Chad's used to hearing that.
I was just quoting Denzel, man.
I thought you were quoting a parent in Better Georgia.
No, I can quote the parents from Bullock Academy Friday night. I mean, but whatever, that's off topic. But yeah. The Bullock Academy parents were screaming at my partner up top about, run the clock! Pass was incomplete, you moron. Why's your coach throwing the ball up 7 in the fourth quarter with under 2 minutes to go? The pass is incomplete. The clock.
Should have ran that clock.
Hey, I was on the play clock. I was doing my job. All I had to do was reset at 40 and hit go. It's $72 just sitting up there going, hitting buttons, baby. Hitting buttons like Tybee's hitting that door right now.
Eat that dog. I thought that's one you like, Matt.
Oh,
I like him more than the other one.
I love the other one.
I hate them both equally. Just for different reasons.
I will gladly take Presley home.
Please.
No, God, no. No.
I'm sure your neighbors would love that.
Oh, my God. I would.
I would never come back to Statesboro.
But anyway, it's that time again. Getting ready to, if you guys are ready.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Always ready.
You guys are ready? Okay. All right, we're going to pour one out, cut them off, per usual at this point in the show. Whit, man, tell us what you're pouring one out for as we meet again on this Wednesday.
I'm pouring one out for not having that much to do over the weekend, because for the first time since the beginning of June, I actually spent a full weekend here without any plans, which was awesome. I got to spend Friday night, got to chill, didn't do anything crazy. Saturday, woke up in the morning, went out and met some people at the Battery for a little bit and watched the games. A buddy of mine from Nashville was in town. And then I went over to my buddy David's and hung out for a little bit and then went home and fell asleep at 9:30. It was pretty awesome. Woke up and the 10 p.m. Pac-12 late night games were on, so I got to watch into those. But so I'm pouring one out for that. And I'm going to be cutting off people that play music during big-time football games. Because when I went over to my buddy's house, he had to play music throughout the entire Georgia game.
Who was it? It was Creed?
It was Creed. I mean, it was Divorced Dad Rock. And look, I love Divorced Dad Rock. We all love Divorced Dad Rock. Makes you feel good about yourself because you're not a divorced dad. Unless you are, then I'm sorry. But like when you got a big game on, especially if it's a team you're cheering for, you got to listen to the game. And I understand some people don't like Gary Danielson. Some people don't like certain other announcers. Whatever. It doesn't matter. If Georgia's in a top 15 matchup, I want to listen to the whole game. I don't want to sit there with the game on listening to Creed scream at me for 4 hours. I want to actually watch the game. So I'm cutting off. I'm cutting off, my friend.
Matthew?
Yeah, so I am pouring one out. Cold weather.
Oh, yeah, it's been great.
Oh, but there's a different kind. So, like, we went up to North Georgia this weekend, back in the Atlanta area, and the crispness that you get hit with of 38 in the Atlanta area is so much smoother and cold than the 38 that we get hit with down here in South Georgia, because there's a stickiness and a thickness to the air here in beautiful, beautiful Bullitt County that you just don't get up there. You walk outside up there and you're like, ah, man can breathe up here. And you can smell the smells that are supposed to be smelt during football season, such as, you know, a nice pot of chili being cooked. And, you know, like, it's just lovely. I really enjoyed having a nice dose of really cold weather before coming back down here and it being 85 yesterday in the middle of the day. And
people don't believe us when we tell them, like, even down here in the winter, it's still humid.
I told witness today. Yesterday I was making sales calls and I went to the Savannah Yacht Club. There were people laying by the pool on November 7th, 2023. There were people laying by the pool in the afternoon.
It's 39. What was it? What was it on Monday? It was 39 in the morning.
Yeah, but then it gets up to 75. Yeah, right. I mean, it's absurd. The differential, it gets just as cold here at night as it does up there, but by midday, it's 10 degrees warmer here. And I mean, I don't miss that part of living down here. But I am actually going to cut off the time change because holy smokes, it sucks. I hate waking up and feeling like I'm running late for work or that I'm not up on time because it's already light outside. Or if I'm going to the gym in the morning, I want it to be dark when I leave. I don't want it to be sunny out. I want to feel like I'm better than you because I've been up earlier. I want to feel pretentious. I don't want to feel like, oh, everybody's up and moving around now because it's sunny outside. No, I hate that. And I hate coming home and being like, all right, hurry up. We got to get to bed because daddy's tired. No. And then you look at the clock and you're like, oh, it's 6:02, Matt. Calm down.
I thought it was 10 o'clock at about 5 today.
I thought it was 10:45. Confuses me, and I don't like it. On Saturdays, I can stay up till 1 in the morning watching Hawaii. On Mondays, I can barely make it to 8.
I think alcohol plays a big part in that too, Matt.
Well, no, because I would go to sleep earlier on Saturdays if the alcohol was involved.
Right, dude. I hate it.
Throwing a couple vodka Red Bulls and, you know, I'm roaring. Dad.
I got to pour one out, and it's a sad pour one out, but it's also a very thankful pour one out for some news that we got about 2-3 hours ago. Ronnie Wash, man. Ron Washington. Congratulations, Ron. We love you. Newly hired manager of the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. If that's still in their name.
It is.
It is, which is so stupid. But, yeah, Ronnie Wash, man. Braves third base coach. Infield coach. Absolute character. Great manager. You know, I kind of knew the day was always coming where our staff was going to start getting picked apart. I mean, when you've got Walt Weiss and Ron Washington and Eric Young and what's our pitching coach's name? Kevin Seitzer. Like, I knew that they were eventually going to start coming for him. But man, that one stings. That one really, really stings. I love Ron Washington, and it just sucks. It sucks to lose him. He's a great personality. But seriously, congratulations to him. It doesn't change the fact that the Angels don't have a pitching staff. So as much as I want Ron to go out there and succeed, I don't really know how they're going to do that because the Angels never have pitching. So, I mean, we'll see. But good luck to Ron Washington, man. Thank you for all you did for the Atlanta Braves. You're an integral part of this rebuild, an integral part of a great staff that we have assembled right now, and a great part of that World Series 2 years ago. It's just I hate to see him go. Kind of knew it was coming, but I hate it. I love Brian Snitker, but there's almost a piece of me, Matt said in the group chat earlier, it almost kind of wouldn't have hurt my feelings if we'd have been like, hey, Brian, we love you, but we want to keep Ronnie Wash here for the long term, so you should just step down and let Ron Washington take over. But that was never going to happen, and I still love Brian Snitker. I don't have anything bad to say about him. But, yeah, and I'm cutting off I-95. Made the trip to the funeral I attended on Saturday. The funeral was for all my hopes and dreams of going to a bowl game this season. And we even wore black. To it.
I didn't even see that coming. I honestly was like, oh, I didn't know you went to a funeral.
Did you actually think you went to a funeral?
Yeah. I didn't think you did.
When you said that earlier, I actually did think you went to a funeral. And I was like, didn't you go to the Florida game? Like, oh, you did go to the Florida game. That's funny.
Give it a check.
We wore black to our own funeral, man. I'm sorry, I got distracted. I'm trying to figure out what Matt's kids are doing back there, man. They're just making
a day in the life.
But anyway, on the way back, we left so Gainesville is 3.5 hours away from Savannah. We left Gainesville at 4 o'clock. Stopped and got something to eat. You know, that about 10-15 minutes like that doesn't put us that far behind. And we're sitting there watching the Alabama game and the USC game, and we're going back and forth. And we took Waze down. It's a mistake. All we see in front of us are headlights. Because from Midway, which was exit 90 or something like that, all the way to Richmond Hill at exit 76. Now, mind you, that's 14 miles of interstate. 14 miles. Closed. All four lanes of I-95. Closed. Try to get on Twitter, try to get on the news to see what happened. I mean, clearly, if you shut down all four lanes of 14-mile interstate, a major interstate like I-95, something tragic must have happened. Couldn't find anything. Still haven't heard anything. But we sat for an hour and a half on I-95 without moving. and it sucked. The only thing that we had to get through it was the fact that we had an iPad with 5G, so we were able to watch football, and we had each other, and you can't put a price on family. But anyway, cutting off I-95 and cutting off wearing black to your own funeral. Jeez.
So I also had Ron Washington. So in lieu of doing a pour one out for him again, which we do miss him, I'll just do two cutoffs this week. The first one I'm going to cut off is NCAA rule that requires transitioning teams to wait 2 years before they can compete in bowl games or conference championships. I've thought this was the dumbest rule for the longest time, and I know why they have it. It's so they can't just like come up, get good players, and then go back down. But I wonder how many times that's actually happened to warrant the rule, because now you have, for example, James Madison, who is now undefeated, is not going to be able to play for the conference championship this year or a bowl game. They're one of, what, 6 or 7 undefeated teams? And so Sun Belt fans will be treated to potentially 4-loss Coastal Carolina or Georgia Southern playing 2-loss Troy instead of an undefeated team, which really sucks. And, you know, Georgia Southern was in the same scenario back when they transitioned up. But, you know, I mean, I get why it's there. It probably won't change, but...
Hey, as Georgia Southern alumni, we love it. But as college football fans, yeah, kind of sucks.
Kind of a dumb rule. And it's going to ruin the championship this year for that conference, but whatever.
I also don't feel bad for him because Georgia Southern literally was in the same boat.
Yeah, I mean...
So, like, get over yourself. Stop acting like you're the first ones that's ever had this happen.
I didn't think that, I mean, I guess I'm sure they're like fighting it, or I'm sure they're like whining about it, but I honestly haven't heard too much about it.
They are. They've appealed it like 3 times already.
Oh, really? Okay.
They've been very loud about it.
Yes. They've been very loud and very whiny, and they're like, it's not fair.
I would feel worse for them if they weren't crying about it as much as they are, yeah, honestly.
And it's not like this happens to the SEC or the ACC.
It's kind of like UCF 2017, where they had the whole national championship thing. If they didn't make it such a big deal, I feel like I would have been more like, well, they went undefeated. Like, you know, they might have deserved
but
a chance.
But then when they put up all the banners. But then when they did all the banners and declared the rings, themselves.
Like, all right, fuck you guys.
So for my second cutoff, unless Matt has more. You got more?
I was just saying, I feel like if Georgia Southern had not literally gone through the exact same thing when I was in school, where they went undefeated in the Sun Belt in year one and couldn't go to a bowl game, couldn't win the Sun Belt championship. Like, I don't care. I don't feel bad for you.
Yeah, it sucks too.
I'll say this:
they are undefeated overall too. Which
that's what I was gonna say. At least James Madison, I don't feel bad for them because it happens to everybody. But I agree with Keys there. At least that's what I was gonna say. They are undefeated as a whole.
Yeah, but did they play 2 Power 5 teams in that span?
Didn't they beat Virginia?
Yeah.
Which might as well be playing an FCS team.
I mean, okay, cool.
Yeah, we brought that up earlier this year with their strength of schedule. But either way, my second cutoff is going to be the amount of injured players in the NFL this year. I don't know if it's drastically more than usual, but I know there's been a crazy amount of top players that have gone down, and my fantasy team has felt the impact. In a couple just to name, Justin Jefferson out. Aaron Rodgers out, Anthony Richardson out, Kirk Cousins out, Nick Chubb out. You know, the list goes on with all these top players. And, of course, I drafted them all in the first 3 rounds. So,
you had 3 quarterbacks that all
different
got hurt?
Leagues, but, you know.
Okay.
I'm suffering in all my leagues at this point. Yeah. So all my top picks are gone. So, I'm fighting. Right now, I've got Perrine leading the way for my running back room. So, it's looking good.
Michael Perrine. LaMichael Perrine. Shout out Florida. And we were, when we at least won double digit games. But
it's probably Samaje Perine, who actually plays for the Broncos.
Dude, I've stopped watching the NFL. I watched the Falcon. Dude, I'm telling you, now that NASCAR is over, I don't know what I'm going to do with my Sundays, because once the Falcons are off, I'm just like, oh, well, that's all the football for me today.
Watch football like an adult, Chad. I said this before. We get 18 weeks of Sundays being filled with football, and you're like, I don't like it. You
what
embrace
about arena
it.
Arena lacrosse.
We
Chad.
Have red zone for a reason. God made red zone to be watched on Sundays.
I don't watch box lacrosse, Keys, because it's stupid.
I feel like Billy Madison when he's like, "Don't you ever say that."
Stay here.
Stay here forever. Don't you ever grow up. Don't you ever say that again. Every time Chad hates on NFL Sundays.
I don't hate the NFL. I just like, I don't know. I love.
You just don't love football. That's what it is. You don't love football.
I love football.
You just hate being happy.
I love college football to death. Like, college football is my obsession to the point to where when I leave here, if Toledo is still on, I will be watching it. But I just...
They're playing Akron, right? The Zips?
No, there's three games tonight. That's a separate game. I think they're playing Kent. Hey, man, I love college football.
Chad likes Maction more than the NFL. I have a problem with that.
I will say, Chad, I just thought it was funny. So at our Halloween party, my girlfriend Krista, she's joined our fantasy league this year, and it's the first time she's ever done fantasy football, and she's like thrilled because she's in first place, and she was like 8-0, and she's been like researching her players every week and just been really excited about it. So she's there and sees Chad in person for the first time in a long time, and she just came off a hot win off of Chad. But she was definitely getting into the trash talk a little bit, which was hilarious for me to get to see my girlfriend trash talking my friends about beating them at fantasy football and not just being like the typical girl that would just like pick the players because they're the hottest ones.
Yeah. She posted a picture from the Halloween party and the caption had nothing to do with her fantasy team. I don't even know if Nathan's following Krista or not, but I tagged Nathan and I was like, shout out for Coach Kistler giving Krista her first L. Oh, but anyway, six games this week, fellas. Number one, huge game. Big noon kickoff on Fox. Happy Veterans Day, by the way, for this wonderful Veterans Day Saturday that we're going to have for all of those out there who serve, from the Coast Guard to the Army to the brand new Space Force. We love you. Thank you for all that you do. On an actual serious note, thank you for all the veterans who do what they do. And hopefully you guys all enjoy your college football Saturday and your Veterans Day. A big noon kickoff on Fox, number 3, 9-0 in the Michigan Stallions. They're going on the road to face number 10 Penn State at 8-1 in Happy Valley. The over-under on this game is 44.5. Michigan favored by 4.5. We're going to start things off with Whit.
Did you just say the Michigan Stallions?
Yes,
like
I did.
Like Connor Stallion, who was recently fired, yes, by the way.
Central Michigan University.
Yeah, from Central Michigan University.
Exactly.
It's going to come out that Jim McElwain was behind this whole thing.
It wouldn't shock me either. And then we're going to see another shark pick. And then we're all going to be in trouble. But I've been looking at this game back and forth this week, actually. Honestly, all season, I keep thinking, because they all play each other away and in different home environments, I keep thinking that Penn State, Ohio State, and Michigan are all going to beat each other. So I think Penn State's going to beat Michigan. I think Michigan's a better team, but Penn State needs a big win this year. That loss to Ohio State was bad. They played them close, but they showed they have a really good defense. Drew Aller played terrible. I think Michigan's better top to bottom. Every single bit of Michigan's better, but Penn State has a top 5 defense in the country. I think they're going to step up, stop J.J. McCarthy. I'm fairly certain this is a whiteout, too. Am I wrong? I don't think I'm wrong.
No, they've already used the whiteout.
They usually do more than one.
But they do multiple whiteouts.
Yeah.
I thought they just did one. I could be wrong.
If it's a whiteout, I'm 100% in on Penn State. If not, we'll get back to it. I might have to make a change of pick before Saturday. But right now, I'm picking Penn State. I think they get the upset.
You are not allowed to change your pick. If I write it in this note sheet on my phone and you say it on the recording, you are not allowed to change it. Once it touches the note sheet, it's in there, and I'm fixing to write down Penn State. But Matt, make your pick.
Looks like there's only one whiteout game a year, and that was against Iowa this year. I know that for a fact, on September 23rd. Don't ask me why I know the date that they played Iowa, but I do. Anyways, I'm going Michigan here. I really am. I just think that they're more talented, and I feel like there is going to be some synonymous energy from the team with what Harbaugh has said through this whole thing. Every time somebody asks Harbaugh in a press conference about what's going on with all this stuff, he gives some answer about football that has nothing to do with it. It's almost like he's giving those Belichick answers back whenever the Patriots were really good and You know, they would be like, oh, so how do you feel about going to play against a rookie quarterback next this week? And he's like, oh, we're just happy to be here, and we're gonna do what we came here to do, and that's win a football game, and defense needs to play good, and that's kind of what Harbaugh's doing right now. He's giving very boring answers. He's not dipping into it, and I think he's got the team locked in. They're more talented top to bottom than Penn State. Drew Aller's going to have nightmares of that Wolverine defense on Saturday. Give me the Michigan Wolverines to come out as winners in the midst of chaos.
So aside from the what's going to happen on the grass this Saturday and in between those lines, on a side note, I saw today that we're going to have some answers and some kind of clarity tomorrow in this whole situation. So we'll see. I really don't think... I think with the way Michigan's been humming the past 3 years with two playoff appearances and back-to-back wins over Ohio State, I think all the outside noise is blocked out at Michigan. So I really don't think that going into this Week 10 matchup that – no, we're in Week 11. Excuse me. Week 11 matchup, that any of that's going to play a factor. However, this game is in Happy Valley. And the thought of what happened to Penn State last year where Michigan put 400-plus rushing yards on them in Ann Arbor, I think that's still fresh in their mind. And I think that that is going to be the key to this game, is I think Penn State will play more inspired. And I know that Michigan, like I said, they have their own outside noise to inspire them, which, it's not going to affect them to the point where I think it would cause them to lose. I think they would use it as inspiration. But I think Penn State... Everybody's kind of painted after they lost to Ohio State. Everybody's kind of painted Penn State in this corner, and I even kind of did so myself. I was like, who are we but James Franklin? Where are we at? Who is Penn State? And I think that they can answer those questions this weekend. Look, Drew Aller's still a solid quarterback. That's a phenomenal defense that they have. They answered the call and absolutely smoked Maryland this past week, who has a pretty solid quarterback in Talia Tagovailoa.
Shout out.
Shout out Tagovailoa, and I like their coach too, Michael Oxley. I do like him. But I think Penn State answers the bell, finally answers the bell this weekend and puts themselves right back in the conversation. Because the truth of the matter is, even though they're at 10, which is only two spots behind Alabama right now, I think people have kind of taken Penn State out of the conversation, and they just assume that Penn State's on their way to another 10-2 season. The New Year's Six Bowl. And I disagree. I think that this is Penn State. I think Penn State will win by 4.5, which is the line. Or around that, give me by a field goal or by a touchdown. But I actually believe that Penn State's defense and the home environment is going to make a difference in this game in Happy Valley. But staying on Fox, 3:30, number 18, 7-2 Utah, going on the road to Seattle to play number 5 Washington at 9-0. Over-under on this game is 51.5. Washington is favored by 9.5. They get it at home, coming off a big win on the road against USC last week where their defense got shredded. But Utah doesn't have the strongest offense in the world. Witt, start us off.
So I think Utah is going to cover the 9.5, but I don't think they win the game. I think that Utah is physical enough to win the time of possession in terms of offense. I think they're strong enough on defense to hold Michael Penix under 52 points, unlike USC could do. But I do think the Penix and that offense is way too explosive. I think they're going to score at least 30 points, and I don't think Utah without Cam Rising is going to get to that point. So I'm going to go Washington, but I think it's only by like a touchdown. I think it's closer than it should be. Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, I've got Washington here, and it's for one reason and one reason only. I really think that Michael Penix is just one of the top three quarterbacks in college football this year. I mean, he has really established himself as an elite talent throwing the ball. Now, I'm not saying he's going to go be, you know, some NFL superstar. That's not what I'm saying at all. But this season, he has been everything that Washington has needed and more. Now, I'm with you, Witt. I do think it's going to be a lot closer than people are projecting, just because I think that Washington's defense is going to give up some points to the Utah offense. Utah is going to be able to get a little bit on them. But Washington feels like a team of almost like a team of destiny, to where they're just on this path to a collision course in a rematch with Oregon in the Pac-12 championship. So, I mean, Washington over the Utes. I think the Huskies stay undefeated.
I agree. We're going Huskies across the board here. 12:30 kickoff may play a factor. That's an early kickoff for these out west teams, which is not something they normally have to do on a regular basis, because they usually either get in the kind of 7 o'clock area, even later games on the Pac-12 after dark, 10:30 type kickoffs. The 12:30 kickoff may play into a factor here, a little bit of an earlier game for those guys. But I agree. Look, there's nothing much else to say. Utah's a good football team. You could make an argument for Kyle Whittingham to be one of the top coaches in the country. I don't think that that program or he as a head coach gets the credit that they deserve on a year-in to year-out basis. If you guys really like rack your brain and remember this, Kyle Whittingham has been at Utah since Urban Meyer left to take the Florida job in 2005. That's how long Kyle Whittingham has been there. I believe, and you might have to fact check me on this, but he's the second longest tenured coach in all of FBS behind probably who, Mike Gundy, because it was Mike Gundy and Pat Fitzgerald and then, but no longer Pat Fitzgerald. But like, Utah's a great program. However, their defense has been great. Like, their defense has been really good, but this game is on the road, and their offense, Barnes is not bad. And they have that other kid that they switch in and out, and their offense can do things on the ground, but their offense can't do anything through the air. Utah's passing offense is nothing. You're going to have to pass the ball if you want to keep up with the guy who right now is 100% going to win the Heisman as we sit right now. It's week 11, still 2 weeks of football and Army Navy left to play after this, so that could change. However, right now that's the Heisman frontrunner in Michael Penix. And you got to get Utah just can't keep up. Cam Rising's absence has really prevented this team's offense from getting going all year like I think they could have and had a better year. Still a tough Pac-12 schedule, you never would have known. But either way, I'm going to take the Huskies here. I think it'll be closer than people think it is. Look, regardless of what happened last week, Washington actually has a fairly decent defense for a Pac-12 team. That USC team just has a ridiculous offense. So give me the Huskies. And I think it'll be more low scoring than people think. Give me the Huskies in like a 21-13 type game, maybe 28-13. It won't be like a huge blowout, but it'll be one of those games that Washington kind of controls from the beginning. But moving on down south, well, it's in the Southeastern Conference. I don't really know how southern you consider Columbia, Missouri to be, but especially when it's going to be 51 degrees at kickoff, because that doesn't happen in the South in November in the middle of the day. 3:30 CBS game of the week, Brad Nessler, Gary Danielson, number 13, 7-2, the Volunteers of Tennessee headed into Columbia, Missouri, like I said, to play number 14, 7-2 in the Missouri Tigers. Tennessee is favored by one. This is a pick 'em. It is a pick 'em. Tennessee is favored by one. Over-under in this game is 58.5. It's a huge over-under for an SEC game, especially an in-conference game. But get us started.
I'm back and forth on this one, too. After how Missouri played in Athens last week, it's hard for me not to pick Missouri, but I am going to pick Tennessee. I think Tennessee's still, at this point, has more talent. I think the starters up front on offense, I take Missouri. I like Brady Cook, honestly, more than I like Joe Milton right now. Even though Joe Milton has started playing a lot better over the last two games. I like the receivers for Missouri, and I like Missouri's defense. I probably should pick Missouri. But I think depth-wise, from start to finish for a game, Tennessee knowing that going into the next week, they're going to get Georgia at home for a chance to potentially be playing for the SEC East if Georgia gets knocked up by Ole Miss this weekend. So I'm going to say Tennessee wins in a super, super close game. I know what I said.
Let's hope they don't get knocked up.
Knocked off.
Yeah, that's why I'm laughing. I was like, did you just say that?
Georgia's going to get pregnant.
They're going to be impregnated by Lane Kiffin. Excuse me, that would be Joey Freshwater. They impregnate.
Yeah.
Joey Freshwater goes to Athens. It's a new kids book coming out this summer, kids. Anyways, Como is very sneakily a tough place to play. And that alone is why I'm going Missouri. Brady Cook, I like him more. Just like Whit said, I like Brady Cook more than I like Joe Milton. Luther Burden is my Biletnikoff winner. Give it to him. Dude is the best receiver in the country. Don't get Whit to say that one either.
Did you say Rod Thomas?
Yeah.
What's the name of the award again, Whit?
Yeah, give us your best try.
The Biletnikoff.
Oh, look at there. Look at there.
You got it right. I thought it was the Blinklehoff award.
The Blinklehoff. Yeah, so I think Luther Burden is going to win the Biletnikoff. He's the best receiver in the country. He is balled out. He probably isn't going to win it because he is in Columbia, Missouri, and Mizzou kind of gets overlooked. But Tennessee's front seven is really good. If they can get pressure on Brady Cook and force some mistakes, kind of like Georgia ended up doing late, then Tennessee's probably going to win. I just feel like Missouri is playing for Coach Drink now in a way that they haven't before. He's got them cooking. And I think Missouri comes away in like a 27-23 kind of game on the winning side this week. Give me the Tigers from Como.
I'm with Matt on this one. I'm going to have to pick Missouri, and for the same reasons that you guys said. Look, I like Brady Cook. I think Brady Cook is a top three quarterback in this conference, probably right there behind Jaden Daniels and Jalen. No. What's Kansas's quarterback's name? Is it Jaden or Jalen?
Jalen is Kansas. Jaden is.
I hate that. I get those two mixed up all the time.
God.
Let me help you, Chad. Let me help terrible. You. Let me help you. So, LSU's quarterback has the D in his name. What is one of LSU's favorite chants they do?
Okay.
Suck this Tiger DB.
Neck. Got it.
Yep. There you go. You feel better?
And Jaden Daniels. Outside of Jaden Daniels, I think you can make an argument for two between Jackson Dart and Brady Cook. I've said that all year. Really like Brady Cook. I thought Brady Cook and Luther Burden played well at times last week against Georgia. But look, Georgia in that game was in Athens. If that game was in Columbia, Missouri, I would have felt differently. Well, I might not have picked Missouri, but I would have felt a little bit differently than I would have going into the game. But this game is in Columbia, Missouri. I like Brady Cook over Joe Milton. Look, Missouri's got a sneaky, pretty decent defense that we have not talked about at all this year. But Matt's completely right. Biletnikoff winner. Tennessee does have a good front seven. But Tennessee's weakness on defense has kind of been their secondary, kind of like LSU. And I think this is a tight game. I think both these teams. Now, Tennessee has a realistic chance to control their own destiny in the East in a very small percentage way. And they have a huge opportunity to do that next week. Now, I don't think they're looking past Missouri at all in the next week. I do not. Because of, you know, what they want Georgia next week. But overall, because this game is at home and because you have the Como crowd on your side, I think this will be the best game of the day. Like, overall in the country, I think this will probably be the best game of the day, without a doubt. But give me Brady Cook to outduel Joe Milton in what's probably going to be like a 20-17 type game. Defenses are solid across the board. Lots of red zone drives that don't pan out that result in field goals. You're kind of stall when they get across midfield. Field position, I think, will be a huge part of this football game. Whoever controls the ball and has the best field position in this game, very Booger McFarland-like of me to say, but I think we'll win. I think field position is the key to this game. Whoever has the best field position and whoever can keep the ball on the team's opposing side of the field to set them up to score points will win this football game, and I think that can be Missouri. And I think it'll be a tight defensive struggle. So I'm actually skipping over this 7 o'clock game that we're going to pick. I'm going to save it for last because I know we're going to have a lot to say about it. Moving on to the ACC, a game that I wasn't sure whether or not I wanted to pick, but with the way that both these teams have played this year, there's still some ACC title implications should Louisville fall or should Florida State fall. Some slight ACC title implications in this game left. 6-3, Duke Blue Devils no longer ranked. Number 24, North Carolina at 7-2. Don't really know why they're still ranked. But Drake May versus Riley Leonard, if he's healthy, this may be the best football matchup of this basketball rivalry that we have ever seen. Like, this is going to be, I think it's going to be a pretty solid game to watch. UNC is favored by 14.5. Over under in this game is 50.5. UNC's at home. 8 o'clock ACC Network. Whit, who you got?
Holy crap. UNC is favored by 14.5?
Yes. That must mean that Riley Leonard cannot be playing.
Okay. That changed my pick. So I'm going to take UNC. I've been watching UNC the last couple weeks. I don't think they're a bad football team, but I don't know, man. I know we've been talking about Drake May all year and how good he is. I don't really see it with him as much as everybody else does. I think he's good, but I think, to me, he's a guy that shines on an offense that really isn't that strong. And he shines because it's like the cheerleader effect. You stick a not that attractive girl around a lot of less attractive girls, and she looks pretty good. So I think Drake May is the same type of situation. So, but I am going to take UNC because of the fact that Riley Leonard is not playing. Riley Leonard, in my opinion, I don't think he's a better quarterback, but I think he's good enough. Duke, better coach football team, Mike Elko. We've been talking about him all season. He's going to end up with a big job next year, whether it be A&M, Michigan, Miss State. Who knows? I have no idea. But I'm going to say UNC because of the fact that Riley Leonard's not playing. Matt, who you got?
Not only is Riley Leonard not playing, Henry Bell in their backup is not playing. So they're going to go with a third stringer into Chapel Hill, and they're going to get steamrolled. Their defense will try to keep them in it, but Drake May's a competitor, and I don't think he's that. Like, everyone keeps trying to compare him to, like, Patrick Mahomes, and, like, I don't think he's that guy. I don't think he's got this massive upside to be a superstar NFL quarterback.
You know who he reminds me of? Sam Howell.
Yeah, I mean, he is. He is Sam Howell reincarnated.
Very wow, good. What a great comparison.
I wonder why.
That's what I'm saying.
No, I mean, like, it. He is. He's Sam Howell. Now, I thought Sam Howell was better than Drake May, though.
I think so, too.
Personally.
Great value. Great value, Sam Howell.
Like, I don't think Drake May, he's a competitive kid, comes from an athletic family, competitive family, brother won a basketball championship at North Carolina. I don't see the massive superstar NFL status that everyone's trying to give him, but he's going to be the best football player on the field on Saturday out of both of those teams. Credit to him for that. And the Carolina Blue takes down the Duke Blue Devils on Saturday. And I think they cover.
Well, first and foremost, for not having my research prepared, but it was announced that after Duke played last week that Riley Leonard's going to miss a significant amount of time. So, my fault, boys. We never should have picked this game. We should have picked Miami FSU instead. But, oh well. I'm with you guys. Riley Leonard might not be coming back this year. Their backup is out. And Duke didn't play that well with their backup in the last game that they played. I can't remember who they lost to. But was it Wake Forest? Did they lose to Wake Forest? No. Duke beat Wake Forest last Thursday. But their offense doesn't look the same without him. Now, granted, yeah, their defense is really good. Like, we talk about Mike Elko all the time and how high we are on Mike Elko. And their defense is still very solid. Look, I think that program is completely bought in. And when you have the opportunity to finally, like, not that these two schools are gigantic football schools, obviously they're both big basketball schools, but when you have the opportunity to at Duke to go into Chapel Hill and beat this North Carolina team who's kind of floated around talk of ACC championship games and has been to one in the past few years, this is a huge game for Duke. I think they'll play them tough. Look, I love Drake May. I really do. I'm actually very high on Drake May. I think Drake May is first quarterback off the board in April. I do. And if the Falcons were to get him, I'd be all about it. However, they don't have the offensive firepower without Riley Leonard. And Riley Leonard's a good quarterback. He's not great. Even without him and now without the backup, who only put up 24 on Wake Forest, I think it'll be closer. I think Duke covers the 14.5. I've still got to stick with the boys in Carolina Blue and the Tar Heels in this football game. Moving on, a late one on Fox. 10:30. Looks like we're going to be staying up late Saturday night, boys. And probably going to be up till 3 a.m. because this game's going to have 148 points scored in it. 7-3, no longer ranked, USC and the Trojans going into number 6, Oregon at 8-1. Bo Nix versus Caleb Williams, over-under in this game, 73.5. And Oregon is favored by 15. 10:30 p.m. Saturday on Fox. Witt, get us going.
After watching Utah beat USC earlier on this year and then watching Oregon beat the crap out of Utah, I can't not pick Oregon in this game. I'm going to be honest with you guys. I think Oregon's a top four team this year in college football. And I'm saying that over Washington, too. I've watched them play. I went back and watched the Oregon-Washington game since I missed most of it because I was in Nashville. Oregon, in my opinion, is a better football team than Washington. I think Oregon is the best team in the Pac-12. I think Oregon is better than at least, what are they, number 6 right now? At least 4 out of the 6 teams in front of them. And I'd say, I mean, if you put them up against Georgia right now, I would not feel very confident in saying Georgia would beat Oregon. That's how good I feel about Oregon this year. So I think Oregon beats the absolute tar out of USC. I think it's a not even close game. I think it's exactly like that Utah game where it's just an absolute beatdown. USC will score points. Caleb Williams will get his stats and keep pushing for the Heisman, even though they're going to lose 5 games this year. But I'm going to go with Oregon, and I think Bo Nix has a huge game against that piss-poor USC defense. That's without a coach now. So, Matt, who you got?
Yeah, I'm going Oregon, and I'm going Oregon big. I'm with you. And I feel like this is going to be very reminiscent for USC of what that Notre Dame game was like, where they just got curb stomped. To me, this Oregon defense is better than Notre Dame's even. And I'm with you, Witt. I said it last week. I think Oregon's a better football team than Washington. I think Oregon is in the top three. I think they're a top three team in the country. I think they're better than Florida State. I think they're better than Texas. I think they're better than Washington. The only teams that I would say I don't know is Georgia and Michigan. I think they're better than Ohio State. I have not seen it from Ohio State this year. They've got the wins. I understand resume. That's why they're number one. But I'm not seeing it from Ohio State this year. And I'm sure that all the Ohio folks are going to yell at me and tell me that I'm biased at SEC. And I hate the Buckeyes, which I don't care for them. But they don't look that great to me. I think Oregon's better than them. I think Oregon wins this game handily. And I think that this is the game that Caleb Williams almost quits. Like, I think that you're going to see the dejection. And if you saw it after the game last week, and I'm not going to hate on the kid. Like, he's put everything that he had into the season, knowing that he was going to be a top draft pick in the NFL, and it's all for naught. I think eventually that wears down on a kid. And how many of these USC kids that are all transfers are just going to cash in? I mean, what are they playing for now? They have no shot at going to the Pac-12. Championship. They have no shot of going to the playoff. There is nothing to play for. And most college football players these days are mercenaries. Went there because they were the highest bidder.
So what you're telling me right now is the San Diego County Credit Union Poinsettia Bowl does not excite anyone?
I am saying that, except for us. Except for us,
we get excited about that. That's the game we'll be road tripping to later on this year. So,
hey, if it's at Petco like it was last year, and it was a great game last year, Oregon and UNC, like y'all remember that? Like, I would low key go to that game. That was great last year, and I want to go to Petco.
I mean, let's take the week off. Me and Matt will work, and we'll drive out there.
We'll be working in our territory.
Just don't tell Bruce. I made sales calls today. Yeah, I've been up in Canton.
Good. All right, Chad.
I'm right there with you guys. Look, I don't think Alex Grinch firing makes a difference. This team is awful on the side of the ball defensively, and Bo Nix is having a great year. Look, it's probably going to be Michael Penix, Bo Nix, 1-2. Maybe you could throw some other names in there, but I think those two are probably going to end up in New York sitting 1-2 in the voting. And especially when you look at the game that they just played against each other as well. Like, I am so hyped. I really hope it works out. I really do. I want to see that rematch. I want to be sitting there Friday night watching that game on my couch from the beautiful Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas. And I want to watch that game because if Oregon wins, and Washington's still undefeated, then we have to have a conversation.
Oh, there's a lot of opportunity for conversation.
There's a lot of opportunity for conversation. And we'll get there. God, I could talk about that right now for 30 minutes.
Same.
But Oregon's good. Really good. I don't have a lot to say that you guys didn't say. So I'll just say Oregon and move on. But now we are going back to the game that I skipped over. Humongous game. Humongous game. Whit, you will pick last because you're a Georgia fan. Matt, you will pick second because you're an alumni. I will pick first. 7 o'clock. ESPN number 9, 8-1, the Rebels of Mississippi, and the Rednecks of Georgia, number 2 at 9-0. Georgia, 10.5-point favorite, over-under in this football game, 57.5. It's in Athens, and I think that crowd's going to be rocking. And there's a big, big, big part of me that really wants to pick Ole Miss. But I can't. I can't. I really want to. This is Georgia's biggest test of the year. Absolutely Georgia's biggest test of the year until next week. Jackson Dart, like I said, you could have a conversation whether you want to put Brady Cook 2 or Jackson Dart 3 or Jackson Dart 2 and Brady Cook 3 in terms of top quarterbacks in the SEC. I would put Jackson Dart 2. Jackson Dart does awesome things. I didn't get to watch any of the game against Texas A&M this past week, but he did awesome things in that game from what I went back and watched. Ole Miss has got a much improved defense. But dang it. I want to pick Ole Miss so bad, dude. I'm trying to talk myself into picking Ole Miss, but I can't do it. Look, Georgia's at home. Georgia's at home. The one year that Georgia actually has a super easy schedule and the teams that end up being their biggest threats, of course, they get it in Athens. Like, it's just ridiculous how that panned out, and I hate it so much. I do think Jackson Dart is the better quarterback in this game. However, Georgia's defense is the better defense, and it's at home. I think Ole Miss is covering that 10. I fully believe Ole Miss is covering that 10, but I just don't think that Ole Miss has the capability to win with the game being in Athens. I think it'd be I'm not even going to say that. I don't even think it'd be low scoring. I think it might actually be quite a fun little shootout. And I'll miss the whole game, pretty much. But no, I'm not going to change my mind. Matt, go ahead and pick before I change my mind. I got Georgia.
Ole Miss is not winning this game, man. And I'm just going to go ahead and get it out there. And I would, there's nothing I would love more than Ole Miss to win this game, because it could set up what would be the most miraculous thing of all time, which would be a complete and utter chaotic playoff scenario in the SEC, where you could have 11-1 Alabama, 11-1 Georgia, and 11-1 Ole Miss, and Ole Miss doesn't go to the SEC championship. And like, so if Georgia beats Alabama and then there's a bunch of other chaotic things, like you're setting up the conversation for how does Ole Miss get in? But look, it boils down to a couple things. One, it is in Athens. And if you look in the tenure of Lane Kiffin's Ole Miss time, the offense has struggles on the road. There's not the same cadence and confidence and ability to move the football on the road as there is in Oxford. Here's a little sneaky stat for you, and I bet most of you probably didn't know this. Ole Miss in their last 22 home games is 20-2 in Oxford. Oxford, the sleepy little stadium in North Mississippi, is not so sleepy. They win at home. Two out of the last 3 years, I'm assuming they're going to beat ULM, and that would be two out of the last 3 years that they went undefeated at home. It's not a coincidence. At some point, like they're really good. Their two losses being Alabama last year and Mississippi State last year in the Egg Bowl in a rainy game, weird game, weird circumstances, all that.
Rest in peace in your final win.
So I just can't bring myself to find a way. Here, the things that Ole Miss has that I think they could keep it competitive. They're going to have to run the ball effectively. And Dart is a good running quarterback, which we've seen that Georgia struggles with. The problem that I have is Ole Miss doesn't have a Luther Burden. Trey Harris is very, very good. They're going to have to account for him, but he's not Luther Burden. And then the second receiver, is it Watkins? Is it Dayton Wade? I mean, they just don't have the talent level at the receiver position to scare me to if I'm Georgia. And then Sean Judkins is going to have to run the ball effectively. He's a better runner against good physical defenses. The run schemes are going to have to be there. Ole Miss is going to have to be able to score. And I just don't see it. I think this ends up being like a 27-14 kind of game where Georgia wins by 13. Ole Miss might keep it close for a little bit. But I feel like I watched this game earlier in the year when I watched Alabama and Ole Miss where, I don't know, and I still question all the time. Like, I think Ole Miss is a good team, but I don't think that they're not there yet to be in that great echelon yet. They're good. They're very good because they win. But they've played a lot of bad teams, and they have yet to really blow one out to make me say, oh, yeah, they've got it. I just don't think they're there yet. Give me Georgia in this game, and I don't think it's particularly close in the end.
This one scares me a little. I know, Matt, everything...
I also hope that you and I are wrong.
Well, this one scares me a little. Everything that Matt said is right. Every single thing he said, I completely agree with. I think the matchup, the bad matchup for Georgia is the fact that Jackson Dart he's not Lamar Jackson, but he's a good running quarterback. He's kind of like how Bryce Young was when he wanted to be. He could run the ball in situations where no one would think he's going to run the ball, and he could surprise a team and completely throw a defense off their heels. One thing that really worries me about this game, number one, no Brock Bowers. Obviously, we knew that coming in. Number two, Pop Johnson got hurt
I saw reports that Brock might be playing.
He's not playing. There's no way. He's practicing, but he's not playing. He won't play yet. But Pop Johnson, who, in my opinion, besides Malachi Starks, is our best defensive player, he's not playing. So we'll have a first-time starter playing at linebacker. This year, Georgia's defensive front, still really solid, not as good as it's been the past couple years. The linebackers have been making up for him in the run game. Teams have had a little bit more success running the ball against Georgia than they had the last couple years. I think that's going to be an issue in this game as well, which is why I don't think Georgia's going to blow out Ole Miss or at least beat them by more than two touchdowns. I think it's... What's the spread? 10 points? 10 and a half?
10 and a half.
I think Georgia wins. I think they definitely keep it within that 10 and a half. I think it's like a... I'm going to say 7-point game. It's going to be really low scoring. I don't think it's a shootout at all. I do think Trey Harris is a beast. I think he's going to have a lot of success, even with as good as Kamari Lassiter's been this year. Teams have found a way to get their best receivers on Dalen Everett, who is a freshman. Well, he's a redshirt freshman playing corner. He's been getting beat by all the best receivers in the country this year. I think Harris will have a lot of luck against him. I think the fact that College Game Day is in town, huge atmosphere in Athens, 7 p.m. game. We're going to have all the fancy lights and all that. It's going to be a crazy, crazy atmosphere. The cheapest ticket right now is $500. So, like, you know, it's going to be big time. It's going to be loud. Sanford Stadium gets crazy. So I'm going to take Georgia. I still think Georgia wins the game, but I do think it's going to be really close.
Georgia also loves to do this thing where they don't really play until the second half. So hopefully
that's been all season.
Yeah, if they come out in the first half, then they'll have a lot clearer path to victory here. But they kind of have been sitting on it until halftime.
Another prediction as well. Same as last week, player of the game, freshman kicker Peyton Woodring. He's been good.
I think this is Carson Beck's like shining moment at the end of the year. When people look back, I feel like they're going to look on Florida as the breakout game where they took the reins off and let him cook. They're going to look at the Missouri game as the managing game where he kind of just had to manage through the game in order to get them a win and not make any mistakes. They're going to look at the Ole Miss game as the game where it was like he's arrived.
Man, I hope so.
I do not.
I don't think I've ever said this.
As an alumni,
it's not even what I was going to say.
Witt's going to be cheering him up from the 600s this weekend, guys. Come on.
Yeah, I'm in 603. Look for me. I'm as far up as you could go in the top deck.
Are you going to be in the red shirt?
This is actually the first time. This is the first time ever I've been in the top deck of Sanford Stadium in my life.
Make sure you bring a rag. Get off that bird poop. I'm not kidding.
Should I bring binoculars?
What?
You might want them.
Binoculars?
Binoculars
for the Blinklecloth Award.
Bernie Sanders binoculars.
All I'm saying is, I've never said this on the podcast, but I have long been a distant rooter for Ole Miss. They're my West team.
You say that every week.
I don't think I have.
Every
I
feel single like you've said week.
It at least once or twice.
You say it once a week.
Whatever. I root for Ole Miss. I do. God, I hope that Ole Miss wins this football game. I want nothing. I want Ole Miss to be good. I do.
Yeah, same.
Before we end this show,
and I also may be an alumni because Matt told me that it may be cheaper to do what he did and go to Ole Miss. So there you go. Thinking about it.
There you go.
Adi Tani.
Yeah. I love Ole Miss, just not this weekend. Just not this weekend. By the way, Ra-Ra Thomas is going to go for at least 600 yards in this game, so I'm really not that worried. But
Ra-Ra going crazy, baby.
Ra-Ra Thomas, the number one transfer in the country last year, unfortunately for Georgia.
I don't understand why I even talk on the show.
There was a woman behind me at the Georgia game this week, and she said, "Who is Ray Ray?"
That's Ray UGA, baby.
Well, first of all, ma'am, his name's Ra-Ra. Put some respect on the number one receiver in the country's name. And the number one receiver on the number one team.
Now that's a Blinklehoff runner right there, if I've ever seen one.
Blinklehoff all day.
He's gonna Blinklehoff.
God. No cap, rah-rah.
Thank you guys so much for tuning into Rowdy Southern Saturday. If you enjoyed the episode, please give us a 5-star rating on Spotify and Apple Music, and follow our social media at RowdyPod on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.